The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes, on this beautiful Thursday in September, September 11th, right? We stopped to remember this day. I was down in Atlanta, Georgia that morning whenever the planes hit the Twin Towers. I was at a Wells Real Estate Conference. Remember old Leo Wells used to be part of the show on a regular basis. My buddy who flew a Cessna 210, we flew down there together. We still have that 210. And he, I'm like, wow, look at that. And he's like, yeah. And he goes, that's not an accident. And I'm like, oh, no, it has to be. And then boom, the second plane came into the tower. And at the time, you know, I had a one-year-old, not even a one-year-old at home. And all I wanted to do was get home, you know, at that moment. Well, they continued on with the conference out of resilience, I think, of, you know, not canceling something because of something, but we couldn't get out of Atlanta. You know, they shut down all general aviation, commercial aviation, and I wanted to rent a car. Well, there were no cars to rent. So my brother, I call him and I said, hey, go by and get get some money from Misty, get the keys to my Jeep. I had a Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo or something like that. I don't remember exactly. And come down and get me. So he did the money part. He went and got the money for Misty, but he didn't bring the Jeep. He brought the roofing truck. Now, he works for Steve's Roofing, my good friend George Shermer, former owner Steve Boltinghouse owns Steve's Roofing, and my friend George Shermer owns Steve's Roofing. So if you want to get mad at Steve, get mad at Steve. Don't get mad at George. And my brother Mark works there. He's an estimator, does a great job. So here he comes, right, all the way down to Atlanta, Georgia. I have a room, and he rolls in. 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm like, why in the heck are you, why did you bring the roofing truck down? Well, he opens up the door, McDonald's sacks roll out, Coke cans roll out. Anyway, he has my sister with him. So not only did he come down in the roofing truck, but he convinced my sister, my younger sister, to come, my only sister, they're both younger, my stepsister and Jaina, they come down to get me. So they're sleeping on the floor in the hotel, whatever. The next morning we get up. Finally, I get to the bottom of why he thought he should bring his roofing truck. And the reason was he needed to stop in Louisville to get some roofing stuff. So he drove his roofing truck. But it was one of the most enjoyable, memorable experiences, just reflecting on life, experiences, our childhood, everything coming from Atlanta to Louisville to back to Bloomington. I remember being in coming back to Bloomington, how somber it was, right? It was so terrible. But yet we united as a country, and the flags were everywhere. Lee Greenwood's song, right? You know, I love the USA song. My dad sang that at church on that Sunday morning. I mean, it was incredible. And then you step back and you think, okay, where are we today? Because we are September 11th. Yesterday, news broke of Charlie Kirk's death during an event in Utah. And, you know, he was... I didn't really follow Charlie, but from what I've seen and what I've heard, he was just a good guy, right? And he was obviously a dad of two young kids. He was a voice in public life. It's crazy that someone would shoot him, a 31-year-old guy, because of his opinions, views, or something. I don't know. But it's interesting, ironic, maybe even, I don't know, divine, that it happened the day before September 11th, as we remember all of those who died, the 3,000 plus people, the courage, the first responders, the ordinary people became heroes that day, and a nation that leaned into each other, not away from each other, in the face of that darkness. And here we are today thinking about Charlie Kirk's death. So as we hold the weight of September 11th and we grieve these recent losses of Charlie Kirk and his incredible kindness and outwardly way of being able to pull people who had disagreements together, and they could laugh together, shake hands together, smack each other on the back or on the head and laugh and maybe even come to some agreement in the middle, I don't know. But we've got to resolve these things that people are dealing with peaceful steps, and be, you know, in love and be stronger than the shadows around us. But, you know, may we never forget, as people would say, that we have to choose to carry each other forward. And that's what we did during 9/11. I remember George W. Bush standing there when he said, "The people that tore these buildings down will hear from us. And they said, basically, "We can't hear you." And that's when he said, "They're going to hear from all of us soon." And we had, obviously, a lot of things that went, you know, good and bad after that. But nonetheless, that's not the point. The point is that when crazy stuff's going on, and we've had craziness, guys, since the start of this republic, when the founding fathers are beating the crap out of each other, you have the Secretary of the Treasury having a duel. I mean, think about the history of our country. We're going to celebrate 250 years next year. And that's young. That's young. Doug Hughes is actually over in Istanbul right now with his family. They're into Europe and all that. I mean, that's old over there. This is new here. So as we go through all of these challenges and hurdles in the way we think, the way we act, the way we, you know, whatever it is, just listen to each other and have some sense of kindness and curiosity. I'm like, why do you feel this way? And maybe you'll feel a little bit more like them, or maybe they'll feel a little bit more like you. And I think that, you know, 80-90% of us are right there. Well, we all kind of are in the same boat. We all want to row in the same direction. We all want good for everybody. But how you get there, that's the challenge, and that's the rub that people have. So life is precious. It can change in an instant. And I'm just saying that we can choose how to treat each other. We can choose. That's a choice, how to treat each other, and that matters deeply. So that's all I have to say about that, and I'm going to move on because I have an incredible show lined up for you guys, and I'm not going to bring in any guests. I'm here by myself in the studio the way the good Lord intended it, right? Your Money with David Hayes. It's Your Money with David Hayes. It's David Hayes. It's no hot rod, no this, no that. It's me today, and I want to thank Dirk Bland and Kenny Bland Auctions and Nikki. I had dinner with them last night, and their great son Alex, as we kind of talked about his future and the future of Kenny Bland Auctions as well, which is bright, very bright. But they want to offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. I did not have dinner with Lance Like, but I would. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. I'll be right back. Mortgage rates are moving in the right direction for most of you. Is that going to kick things into gear? I think so. I've had a lot of conversations with different people around. And why is the 10-year treasury falling, right, which is the key to mortgage rates? And why does that affect mortgage rates? Debt-to-income ratios, amortization schedules, all kinds of fun stuff to talk about. When I come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Appreciate you hanging out with me on this wonderful Thursday evening, 6 o'clock on Bloomington's Voice, 98.7 WGCL. You can always catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. or on WGCLradio.com. And after the Thursday night airing, then it will be on the wonderful world of podcasts as well. Jimmy Inman Jr. had put together a bunch of news of the week for me, and I decided to ditch it, but he had a bunch of Wall Street Journal stuff here. Inflation erases U.S. income gains for last year. Mining mega deal shows the world it is crazy for copper, right? Dr. Copper, as we call it. When the price of copper is going up, that means things are on the move. We had, what else do we have here? He had healthcare jobs are a rare bright spot in the stalling labor market. All that to be said, I think that the inflation numbers we've seen recently, the manufacturing reports, all that is certainly pointing to a Fed move soon. So the question is, what does that mean to mortgage rates? Well, I would say not nothing, but not a lot, because the 10-year treasury is like the heartbeat of the financial markets. When it shifts, everything else pays attention. Its yield moves mainly because of three forces working together. One, most important in my opinion, inflation expectations. If investors think prices will rise faster in the future, they demand a higher yield to compensate for the erosion of their purchasing power. But if inflation looks tame or falling, yields tend to drop. So Federal Reserve policy, right? The Fed doesn't set the 10-year directly, but its short-term interest rate decisions and signals and moves does ripple out into the longer-term yields. For example, when the Fed hikes aggressively, investors often demand higher yields on long bonds, unless they think the rate hikes will trigger a slowdown. This is where the quandary comes into play, in which yields will actually fall. Supply and demand for treasuries, the government consistently issues new debt, as we all know, and when supply jumps, after like a big spending bill, or COVID, right, or whatever it is, where they issue just tons and tons of debt, then, you know, buyers aren't lining up fast enough. Then you have on the demand side, right, this is where people are buying it. Treasuries are a global safe haven. In times of fear, wars, recessions, stock market crashes, money floods into them, pushing yields down, right? And then you have other cross currents going on. Economic growth expectations, stronger growth tends to lift yields. Global central banks and foreign buyers, if Japan, China, and pension funds shift their holdings, that can swing the market. Then you have some other stuff, which I don't think really drives it that much, like the technical trading and positioning. Sometimes yields move just because big funds rebalance or hedge. Basically, the 10-year is constantly balancing what investors believe about inflation, growth, and Fed policy and the risk appetite. But the key is low 10-year yields equals lower mortgage rates. Now, I was talking to someone about this just recently who said, hey, I just issued a, they were a mortgage guy, I just got a 20-year at 5.75. Great. Well, that's a good, right? Because that's a big difference between the mortgage rates we saw back, you know, whenever, and just a year ago, or even less than a year ago, at 7. Because if you can get rates down to even to 5 or so, and I would say mortgage rates typically around 2%-ish, maybe above the 10-year. So if it's a 4, it should be at 6, and so on and so forth. That's not perfect, but there is something to that. But I think when it comes to debt-to-income ratios, that's important to watch. The income you have coming in monthly, how much of that is going to debt? So if the total is, say, 40 or 45%, that's about the absolute maximum the banks will say is okay. And how much is going to my home? They're going to say maybe 30, 35%. And this is of your gross earnings, right? That's why just because the bank says they'll loan you the money doesn't mean you should borrow it. They'll loan you money based on these ratios and what shows up on your credit report and all that. And to get your debt-to-income ratio in line, you may have a car payment that's $500 a month, but you only owe $2,000 still on it. Well, they count the $500 against your debt ratio, so why not pay the $2,000 off? Now you don't have $500 a month being paid out, and that brings things in line. But amortization matters. And what I'm saying is I want you all to join me in this effort and say we need longer amortizations. And I know people are like, that's crazy. But how do you make inflation work for you, not against you? Have a fixed payment on my home. I don't give a crap if it's a 30-year, 40-year, 50-year mortgage. If I have a fixed interest rate, 20 years from now, it's going to feel like half of what the payment is today just because inflation is working for you, not against you. I say we go to a 45-year amortization as an option. Interest rate won't matter as much. Your payment could be literally a third or more, actually more than that, 35% less than a 30-year mortgage. get your debt to income ratios in line, get you some home ownership, because if you don't have a home ownership, what do you do? Renting. Well, guess what? Rent goes up every year, in most cases. You don't own anything. You have no equity ever. And I would challenge you guys is if you're saying, what are you talking about, Hayes? Heck, at one time in the early 2000s, we had reverse amortization loans. We had reverse amortization loans, which meant that the loan was growing, not lowering. We had interest-only loans back then. All of it was just stimulative to the real estate market. Of course, it went to all hell in a handbasket in 2008. I mean, the walls came crashing in with the mortgage crisis, and we learned something from that. But our memories are very short as Americans, as investors, as anything goes. So I'm like, why not have a 45-year mortgage or amortization loan? It's better than reverse amortization or whatever. It's better than interest only. Why not? So I'm just asking all of you to join me in this effort. And when you have an opportunity to speak with someone who has any control whatsoever over this, or just keep saying, we're going to have a 45-year amortization loan at some point, some sooner than later, it might very well happen. It's kind of like, you know, you just kind of wish yourself into situations, which I've done that many, many times over the years. I am going to do this. I'm going to not do that. Or I will be in this publication. Or I will be whatever it might be. Just keep saying it over and over and over. And you'll be amazed how sometimes and most of the time, all of a sudden it becomes true. So when I have the ear of Aaron Hausch, and when I have the ear of Todd Young, when I have the ear of anybody that's associated with the Fed or Freddie or Fannie Mae, which I don't, some people I do, some people I don't, but I'm like, people listen to this podcast or radio show do, they probably do. We're always 1 or 2 degrees from separation from anyone who has a decision-making ability of this sort. So I'm just saying, join me in the effort to encourage a longer amortization. It gets more people in home ownership. It gets people's debt-to-income ratios in line so they're not overspending on things like housing and whatever. And it gives them home ownership and makes inflation work for them, not against them. And I'm done. Amen to that, right? All right, I did a webinar this week with Ed Slott on the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. What I found interesting, I'll talk about that because there's always a few things that pop up, right? Every time, is it like watching a movie where you've watched it maybe 3 or 4 times or an episode of Friends that you've seen 10 times or Seinfeld that you've seen many times and you watch it and you pick something up new? Because it's like, I never noticed that, or I never caught that joke, or I never got this message that came out of the scripture. You know, if you think about going to church, right? You go to church every week, and you hear they preach out of the same book every single week, and they'll recirculate topics and things, and then you might hear it in your mind for the first time, but you've heard it 100 times. Well, to me, as I've studied and dug into the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, that's what's happening to me. So when I come back, I'll share a couple thoughts. And especially the interesting part on the Treasury tipped occupation codes, the preliminary list. Who qualifies for tips and who don't? We'll be right back. We'll have some fun with this one. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, if I didn't need my phone, I don't really need my phone. I can ask Alex about how much longer do I have or whatever. It'll help me out. But I like to keep a little timer. But the issue is when I have a timer, I also have texts coming through my phone. And as I'm here on the air, I literally have had 30 texts. I'm like, do people not know, who know me very well, who have my cell phone number, that I have a standing date on Thursdays? Well, I do. And here I am. So listen, I did a webinar this week with Ed Slott on the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I'll have Ed on sometime soon. I've got Jolene Dixon coming on October 2nd, I believe. She is, of course, the guru locally on Social Security. And I'd be anxious to have her on as well. That's, once again, one of those things that you hear information over and over and over. And I'm like, I'm 59, I'm 61, I'm 63, whatever, or whatever. I'm already on Social Security. But when it matters to you, your ears perk up. So even though we talk about Social Security a lot on the show, we talk about a lot of things a lot on the show, sometimes it goes in one ear and out the others. But we can continue with consistency in these topics over and over and over, kind of like going to church on Sunday, reading out of the same book, you may be getting something different each time, and that's what's happening with the Big Beautiful Bill Act. So one of the things that kind of just hit me was this senior bonus deduction. So let me walk you through this. For 2025, the standard deduction is now $31,000 if you're married filing joint. And if you're over 65, you both get an extra $1,600 deduction. And then if you are over 65, you also get this, quote, senior bonus deduction of $6,000 each. So that's $46,200 of free income, income that you can earn and not pay any tax on. Then after that, the next $23,000 is taxed at 10%, the next $70,000 at 12%. That's a ton of income. You can do all of this, not affect your Medicare premiums. It won't kick you into net investment income surtax. It's really a no-brainer. It's really an absolute no-brainer. That was one that just kind of hit me like, wow, that's a lot of income. The child tax credit's expanded. You know, so if you have a kid, right, this year, or if you have kids this year, that's a pretty big credit. I think it's now, I got it right here. So it is $2,200 per kid that you have, indexed for inflation each year. This is going to be making inflation work for you, not against you, once again. That's start the inflation, and this is for kids that are age 17 and under. It's a refundable tax credit as opposed to it being used to offset other taxes. It has a phase out, but not until you guys are making like $400,000 as a couple together. It's pretty solid. I mean, that's a big tax credit. So again, to me, that's a good incentive to have kids. Like, you get a tax credit to help pay for child care and other things. And then you have these Trump tax accounts. If you have a child prior to the end of this year and in the next couple of years, then you get a $1,000 Trump account. Now, these won't be ready to set up. I just found this out with Ed's meeting until next July. Then next July, they can set them up because they're still trying to figure out what these really are, because they're kind of like an IRA, but they're not an IRA. And then you can put $5,000 a year in on behalf of the child. But remember, an IRA, you can only contribute if you have earned income. So this is a chance to do that. And then you're going to invest it in some low-cost index-type funds and let it rip. So if you do the math on this and you're 18 years old and you put, you know, $6,000 the first year, $1,000 from Uncle Sam, $5,000 from you, and you do $5,000 every year for the next 17 years after that, and you get a decent return on that money, that's actually pretty substantial. Then at that time, then it can be treated like an IRA, and it's a really flexible on what they can use the money for. So that was a pretty cool moment. And then I also was looking at the pass-through deduction they call QBI, Qualified Business Income, and that's for a pass-through entity where you get a 20% kind of deduction just because you're a self-employed kind of person. Well, here's what happened. There was a limit on state and local income tax, the SALT tax, where if you could only deduct, itemized deduct up to 10 grand, that's now 40,000 for a few years. And that might allow you to be in the itemization club, which is kind of a cool club to be in, because then you might be able to deduct other things as well. But one thing it did, whenever they increased it to 40 grand, they said, okay, the state tax deduction that businesses get. So like for my business, let's say I owed, $100,000 in state income tax for our business. I could then deduct that off of my federal side. Well, when they increase it to 40,000, remember, it's passed under reconciliation, so I give you this, I got to figure out how to pay for it over here. They said it's no longer allowed for you to do this state deduction thing. And that was part of the congressional budget that they were passing up. Well, the Senate said, no, we're going to put that back in. So you now have the $40,000 limit on itemized deductions for the state and local income tax. And you still get that state deduction if you're a pass-through entity as well. So that's kind of cool. And then what else I was going to talk about? Oh, yeah. So the interest on new car loans, right? I was talking about this in one of my programs, that you can get a $10,000 deduction on loan interest on brand-new cars that were final assembly in the United States, right? Well, I was Ed brought this up. He's like, who's going, and then your income, it phases out after like $150,000. Well, he's like, well, if to have $10,000 a year of interest, you'd have to buy a car that's like a $100,000 plus car. He said, who's going to do that? That is already going to, they have to spend 100% of their income on a new car. No one's going to do that. So I don't think that's ever even going to come into play. So I don't know how that became part of the reconciliation. It's no incentive at all. I mean, sure, you might be able to deduct $1,000 or $2,000 off of interest. 10's the max. And then the other thing that I just picked up from Ed again, and he said it here on the show, is that everyone's so focused on required minimum distributions, right? When they get to age 73 or 75, if born in 60 or after. And he said, quit thinking like that. Remember, it's required maximum distribution. Let tax planning drive the distribution planning. And I think that was a great way to put it. And I'm obviously on that bandwagon 100%. Never let a good tax bracket go to waste, especially if you're in the 12%, because then you jump to 22. But even if you leak into 22, it's not that big of a deal. It's like that next dollar's at 22. It's not all of it's at 22. Understanding capital gains, long-term, short-term, how that affects your other income as well. There was a lot there. But when I come back, I want to talk about what is permanent, what is not permanent, what does that even mean? And then we have some always rules, right? So there is a couple always rules. We always follow these rules. Inflation, making that work for you, not against you when it comes to tax rates. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about is tips, right? Tips. Personal, if you provide personal enrichment to others and you receive gratuities for that, that qualifies you under the tip occupation codes. When we come back, I'm going to talk about that. We'll have fun with it. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right. Enough of that music. More on the webinar with Ed Slott. So he calls the OBBA, O-B-B-B-A, OBBA, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Permanent isn't permanent. Ed made fun of this as well. Legislation like this is always wrote in pencil, no matter what it says. Now, some things sunset, which we've gone through that a lot here on the show already, you know, the senior bonus deduction, a lot of things sunset in a few years, kind of a promise. The tips on tax on tips and the deduction for that. Keep in mind, none of this is no tax on Social Security. None of this is no tax on tips. It's giving you a deduction to offset some of the tax on Social Security. But the interesting thing is, age 65, everyone gets the deduction. If you're on Social Security at age 63, you don't get the deduction. So it's not a no tax on Social Security. Or if you're 65 or 66 and are not taking Social Security yet because you want to make it to 70 or 67 or whatever your FRA is, then you're getting a deduction just because you're 65. So it is an incredible opportunity to just take advantage of and make sure that you know and you're not wasting that opportunity. The other thing is, he mentioned the always rules. We have probably the five what I would call always rules, right? One would be, go when someone says, I need money to buy something, my always rule is go where the money's the cheapest or where it makes the most sense. Now, what does that mean? Sometimes if it's in an IRA and you're in a high tax bracket, is taking $100,000 out to keep $60,000, is that very cheap? No. Is it better to borrow the money from the car dealership at 2 or 3% for 3 or 4 years? Probably. So it's always where the money's the cheapest. But Ed's number one always is, always pay the tax at the lowest possible rate. And if you go back historically, like I did in the last show, went from 1913 through the 40s into the 70s and into current times, we are literally in modern times, if you can call it that, the lowest possible tax rates ever. Inflation, right? Inflation, making it work for you, not against you. I love that. When it comes to tax rates, it's a big, beautiful thing because brackets expand with inflation. So when we have 2 or 3% inflation, guess what? The brackets expand with inflation. Child tax credits go up with inflation. Last thing I will talk about is tips. Let's just start tipping folks, right, as pay. Like I've joked about that. I'm just going to call everyone in my office now, you know, whatever. I'm going to pay them the $2.25 an hour like they do at restaurants or $2.50, and the rest is tips. Well, you know, that's sounds interesting on paper, but it's not. So the IRS came out and said, okay, who actually qualifies to receive tips? Like, who is personally enriching other people's life? So they came out with 68 different occupations, from food and beverage service, entertainment and events. So here's the thing. Let's say you're a YouTuber. I don't know any really, I mean, I know a couple actually YouTubers, believe it or not, who get paid because their content is useful to others. Now, again, they're personally enriching them by showing them how to keep a great lawn, how to make great meat on a Traeger or a Big Green Egg or some of those other things that we don't want to speak about here on this radio show, right? Entertainers and performers, they're included in this. Locker room, coat room, dressing room attendants. Then we have hospitality and guest services, right? We know all about that. Maids and housekeepers, concierge, home services. This is interesting. This is one I wanted to have a little bit of fun with. So home services, you can tip them, and they don't have, and they can get the deduction on their tips. This would be home maintenance and repair workers. So what if my, I think what I'm going to start doing is just saying, hey, I'm going to pay you whatever minimum wage is for the 6 hours you're here at my house, but the rest of it I'm going to put as tips, and I think you should put that on your invoice. This was my base pay. Here was the gratuity. Because home maintenance, repair workers, landscapers, groundskeepers, here's the funny thing, electricians, plumbers, HVAC people, all of them qualify as personal enrichment. I laughed at this because I'm like, who in the heck would tip their plumber? And then I was like, yeah, me. And they're, why? Because they actually showed up, right? I mean, we're always waiting for that person to show up at the house. Maybe it's the cable people, right? We don't even have cable anymore. Cut the cable. But anybody that says we'll be there between, or Lowe's or Menards or anybody who's delivering something, we'll be there between 10 and 2 o'clock. Well, who has time to sit around for that many hours waiting for them to show up? And then my wife will tell you, they say between 10 and 2. Sometimes they're there at 8 in the morning. Surprise. And then sometimes it's like 2:01 and they finally roll in the driveway. So I just thought it was interesting when you look at what qualified as personal enrichment, which is the terminology they use for the tip eligible occupations released by the Treasury Department just released not long ago. But everyone else kind of makes sense, right? You have your personal services, which would be like private event planners, event officiants. Oh, that's what I'll do. Now that I officiate weddings almost for a living, I feel like I will now accept tips. I never accept anything, but I'll accept tips. And who else here? Like dog walkers? Yep, they're on there. Skin massage therapists, skin care people, barbers, hairdressers, that all makes sense. Shampooers. Did you know that was a job? Shampooer? My wife probably knows that, but I wouldn't know that. I'd just go in and get my hair cut. But people, I guess, only do shampooing. That's okay. Here's shoe and leather worker repair, right? I guess when you go to the airport at Indianapolis, they have a shoe guy there. Me and boys tip him, so I guess he's good to go. But here's the funny part. Do you think any of these people actually claim their cash tips? No, none of them do. Zero of them do. And if they do, they're lying to you. The people that get paid by credit card a tip, like the people working at Malibu, where I just had lunch today. Wonderful. It's a great, great place to go. Majority of the money that they make is tips. And we pay on a credit card. It gets put on their W-2 right under tips. But listen, there's not a person alive that I know of that if you give them a $50 bill, $20 bill, $10 bill, $100 bill, cash, it goes nowhere on record except in their jean pocket. That's the way life works. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about last week. I get asked all the time, can I own real estate in my IRA? I didn't get to this last week. I ran out of time. What other investments can I own? What are the risks? What are the potential rewards? Self-directed IRAs have been around since 1975 when I was 5 years old. They were introduced part of the ERISA Act of 1974. We're going to come back, talk about all of that if we have time and more. Yep, we do. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes on this September 11th. If you didn't get to hear how I started the show, I would encourage you to rewind it if you're able and to understand the impact that 9/11, September 11th, 2001, that morning of, how it impacted really all of us and how it brought everyone together. And then you have the disturbing news of Charlie Kirk's death, getting shot at an event in Utah at a college that he was speaking at. He was going to come here to Indiana University, and I think a month or so, my wife was telling me. I didn't know that, but I probably would have went out there to see what it was all about if I had time. And, you know, it's just one of those things, like September 11th, man, we leaned into each other, and I just feel like right now everyone's leaning, you know, away from each other. So, again, if you have a chance to go back, I didn't have anything written down. It was just kind of spilling from my heart and from my mind and the things that I think are probably better than when you script things out and write things down. But if any of you know me very well, I've scripted very few things in my life. Everything is usually bullet points from the hip, from the heart, or whatever is in between. All right, let's talk about self-directed IRAs. So I get asked all the time, can I own real estate in my IRA? Well, sure you can. What other assets can you earn or own? All kinds of things. So self-directed retirement accounts is what they're called. Where, you know, I'm not suggesting that you do any of this. I'm just telling you that it's allowed. But it has to be self-directed. And that gives you the freedom, the flexibility, and choice how you invest your money. Everyone, you know, there's only so much of this or that you can buy in the publicly traded market. So a lot of people are like, I want to diversify into other things beyond the stock market, beyond the bond market, into other investments like mortgages, loans, real estate, private placements. Diversifying your investments, increase the chance of protecting, in some cases, enhancing maybe your retirement. So we have a lot of relationships with people around the country, and I have a few trusted resources that I refer people to if they're really wanting to do this. But you have to be careful because there's a lot of rules involved. So again, this has been around, IRAs have been around since 75, part of the ERISA Act, Employment Retirement Income Security Act of 1974. The term self-directed simply means that you as an individual have complete control over selecting and directing your IRA investments, right? With a self-directed account, you can buy real estate, again, limited partnerships, commercial paper, pretty much anything when it comes to the IRA. There's a few prohibited things you cannot buy, like you can't own life insurance, you can't own collectibles like art, antiques, gems, coins, wine, or even certain precious metals, but not many. You are S corporations, trusts that qualify as an IRA are not eligible. You cannot be a shareholder of the S corporation. So I could say, hey, would you like to invest in Comprehensive Financial Consultants? And you don't own any shares in it, but you're going to invest, the IRA is going to invest in it. You can have the IRA own 50% of something, 20% of something, and other people own the other part. You cannot borrow money from your IRA cannot borrow money. It's like its own person in a way, but there's a lot of rules. There's lots of different things. You can invest in account receivable financing, anything pretty much. Tax lien certificates, lots of things. And people do that. So you have to be careful because here's the thing: when it comes to prohibited transactions, there are several. Probably the biggest mistake people make is self-dealing. So let's say that you decide I'm going to buy this rental home, and I am going to have the IRA buy it. So it's cash because no loan, no nothing, cash. Then I decide, you know what? I'm going to go repair or replace that toilet myself. Well, that would be deemed a contribution to that IRA. Are you eligible to make a contribution? What's the value of that time worth? It gets complicated. Do I want to change the doorknob? Am I managing it myself? Do I have another company managing it? So it becomes somewhat complicated. And if it's a prohibited transaction like self-dealing, then you could easily blow your entire IRA up. So what I tell people is, usually the answer is yes to most things when it comes to IRAs and what you can invest in. And I get it. I mean, we want to invest in things that are different. I get it 100%. But you need to be careful. You need to be really careful, because if you screw up, right, then you screw up. And remember, if you lose money in an IRA, there's no deduction for that. If I invest in something and I lose money and I sell it at a loss, guess what? I get a deduction for that against other income. But in an IRA, it's gone, baby. I don't care if it's a Roth. I don't care if it's a traditional IRA, whatever. It's gone. I like the idea, if you're going to establish a self-directed IRA and you think it could be a home run, where would I want to put that? In my traditional IRA or a Roth IRA? I'm not even going to tell you guys, because the math is so simple on that one. Of course it's a Roth IRA. So when you buy real estate with your IRA or anything else, just get with somebody who knows the rules, can keep you from falling into the pitfalls of what could screw it all up, and make sure that you have a reputable custodian behind you. Because remember, those 5498s that go out in May to let the IRS know exactly how much you have in a retirement account, right? They do. And it says at the top, for IRS information, this is being supplied for their information. That's all it is, because they want to know, how much money does Americans have? Yes, it's Americans. Americans have in IRAs, in traditional IRAs, 401ks, Roth IRAs. They need to know. They want to know all that information. I think that drives tax policy as well. So there has to be a valuation done every year. So when you talk about, oh, this sounds too good to be true. No. It's too good to be free, because the valuation, if I have to do a valuation on a piece of real estate every year, or something that's kind of obscure every year, who does that? What does it cost? So generally speaking, there are, on the surface, not as much cost, but when you start digging into what I'm investing in, what the reporting requirements are, and all of that, it can be quite costly. So make sure, if you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly, be big, go in hard, but not too hard where if it goes bad, you spoil the entire honeypot. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. We'll wrap this show up. It is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. We're wrapping up the big show. Hope you enjoyed it. If you missed any of it, you can catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. WGCLradio.com, or after the Thursday night airing, you can catch it on your favorite podcast platform as well. So we have a great weekend. We have North and South, right? They are at, I believe, South Friday night. Big rivalry. Edgewood's over at Owen Valley. The 3-0 Mustangs knocked off number one. But anyway, they were number one in Class 1A. Knocked them off last Friday in an exciting game. A lot of high school stuff going on. And then Indiana plays at Indiana State Friday night, which I hate Friday night college games. Please preserve that for high school. As a former high school football player, that's where everyone should be hanging out, not at IU Stadium. But because of our, quote, obligations to our season tickets, RV, tailgates, and all that, we'll be out there at Memorial Stadium to enjoy the game. Saturday, not a lot going on Saturday, I don't think. I'm sure I'll be dealing with the RV or something. Who knows? Sunday afternoon, my wife leaves for Florida. I have a Little League football game at 1:15 at South. We're going to win that big time. And then I actually have a week where my wife is gone, which means two things. One, I have a lot of responsibility, which I don't like. Dogs, everything. Too much responsibility. You don't know how much responsibility you have until she's gone, and it's way too much. But two, freedom. So I have, I like to be busybody. So I know Tuesday and Thursday night I'm super busy, and I got other stuff going on. But it is kind of fun when you can just go to the car wash at 8:45 at night. You don't have to say, I'm going to go get my car washed. And she's like, why? I'm like, well, I just feel like going to get my car washed, which is pretty common for me. So anyway, it'll be a fun week. I'll be back next week. Don't forget, Jolene Dixon will be on Social Security Office October 2nd. Have an incredible weekend, everyone. And remember, it is September 11th, and we need to keep everybody that I mentioned, Charlie Kirk's family in mind, and just the nation in mind. So have a great one, everyone. I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.